6 weeks ago, Tennessee lawmaker Justin Pearson was expelled from his seat representing House District 86. Yesterday, he was in New York State's capital as he works with legislators across the nation in the fight to end gun violence and environmental injustices. In early April, Tennessee Republican House members, largely white and male, employed a disciplinary tool little used since the 1800s to expel Pearson and another black Democrat, Representative Justin Jones, while sparing Representative Gloria Johnson, who is white. Both men have since been reinstated by their respective county boards of commissioners. I spoke with Pearson on Wednesday about his realization that he was being silenced by an opposing political party and not by the people who elected him.
It was a terrible day for democracy when myself, Representative Jones, were expelled and Representative Johnson was put on trial. But what was really put on trial is whether or not we believe in the ideals of democracy and whether or not those ideas can truly be translated into policies and practices. It is unconscionable still to me that duly elected representatives could be expelled by members of the majority party at a whim, not for any crimes being had or anything like that. In fact, in Tennessee, there was a member who committed sexual assault against a 19-year-old that the speaker knew about at the same time that we were being persecuted, and he was never expelled. They offered him the opportunity to resign after that became public. And so there's a double standard that goes on when you're dealing with institutions whose systems are depending upon white supremacy or patriarchy or misogyny that we have to be intentional about uprooting if we're going to get just practices toward each other as legislators and just resolutions toward the people that we care about through legislation.
While I was watching what was going on in Tennessee and it was unfolding in real time, the one thing that I thought about were the people who came to the Capitol and wanted to be heard. And those are the people that you're ultimately speaking to, but they're closed out too, right?
The disenfranchisement that happens to the tens of thousands of people when lawmakers are expelled, or as we saw in Montana, where lawmakers are censured, is harmful for our democracy because it is silencing the voices of dissent. It's silencing the voices of advocacy and oftentimes of reason for the moral issues that we are talking about, because it isn't an issue about politics, being a Democrat or Republican. When it comes to the issue of gun violence, it is about what is right and wrong. And we should all believe that it is right for a 9-year-old to go to school and for a parent to expect to see that child come home. It is right for us to say that everyone deserves clean air and clean water and clean soil. It is right for us to say that people deserve a living wage and a minimum wage in order that they can live their lives more fully without working 80 and 90 hours a week just to make ends meet. It's right for us to ensure that people have housing and aren't forced to sleep outside because we refuse to have rents at a reasonable rate. These issues are about morality. And when we silence the voices of dissent, when we silence people in our state houses, which really are the front lines of our democracy, we disenfranchise people in a really systematic and a harmful way, using the weight of the government to do so. And what happened in Tennessee was that disenfranchisement, which hurt all 70,000 of the people that I represent in a majority black district, because the majority white Republican supermajority didn't like that we were standing up against the National Rifle Association, the Tennessee Firearms Association, and the American Firearms Association. And that is wrong.
This is days, just hours after you have a bloody tragedy, and adults and children die. And what was your hope before any of this happened? What was your hope that you could achieve?
We shouldn't have to have tragedies in order for us to do the right thing. And oftentimes in the wake of tragedies, we hear people offer thoughts and prayers. But when you are an elected official in particular, thoughts and prayers are a very weak and cowardice response to the problems that you see. As a legislator, you have a job that allows you to do something about the problems. And so my expectation was not that representatives would just offer thoughts and prayers, but that they would actually come to the table with legislation that addresses the problem, that ensures that people don't have weapons of war, that makes sure that we have gun storage safety laws, that ensures we have red flag laws, sensible things that have even been passed in red and Republican states in the wake of tragedy. That was my expectation for what would happen. But instead of dealing with assault weapons. The Republican Party in Tennessee assaulted democracy, disenfranchised the voters of District 52 and District 86, Representative Jones and myself, because they did not want to systematically and intentionally address the problems as it relates to gun violence.
So you get expelled, and then you are returned. What was that like of that day when you go back and you're walking amongst your colleagues?
Yeah, I remained determined to represent District 86 because that's what I was elected to do. Yeah. That's all I wanted to do. I didn't want to get expelled, and neither did any of my colleagues. That was not our goal, to be expelled. It was to raise the issue and to raise up the voices of our community, particularly thousands of children. 7,000 children showed up to the Capitol the Thursday where we went to the well, advocating that we do something, that we pass some law to protect them in their schools and in their communities. And so going back, I remained as determined as ever, with several hundreds of people with us in the galleries who were very supportive. And even to this day, it is remaining focused on the mission of elevating the issue in our community so that we can do something differently.
They kept on saying the Republicans, and I want to talk to you about a supermajority in a second, but they kept on saying the Republicans that they had to focus on other work. And a lot of that was regarding trans students, right? So how big of a problem is that in Tennessee?
It's not a problem, but we have these red herrings that Republicans put forward to distract us from real issues. Tennessee has the lowest voter participation of any state in the union. It has one of the lowest literacy rates. It has some of the highest poverty. It has 17 rural hospitals that have closed down because we refuse to do Medicaid expansion. We've got real issues that need addressing. But instead of dealing with issues that could actually improve people's quality of life, we create laws without having real problems in order that a fomenting of a culture war can exist. And like we can't get distracted by that because it is also very dangerous because it's creating a narrative of othering. And when that happens, it becomes much more easy for people to legislate differences as bad and give a signal to people who are not particularly sane to do things against those communities and violate other people's rights. And so these red herrings that they do create, they're also a shot across the bow to extremists that they can other gay people or LGBTQIA people or transgender people in a way that is dangerous for all of us. And so when we think about what are real issues that impact people, whether or not they have food on the table, whether or not they have good housing, those are real issues that we have in Tennessee. But instead of addressing those, the Republican Party foments culture wars to distract away from that. And for the Democrats, for people who care about progress, for people who care about the lives of those who've been most marginalized and oppressed, our responsibility is to continue to keep a moral eye on the issues that we know matter and to tell the truth about this legislation, whether it be banning books or banning transgender affirming care for LGBTQIA youth. We have a responsibility to tell the truth about what is going on and to push back in all the ways that we can.
What does it say about a supermajority? Just by that name alone, it says to me anyway that it's going to be an unlevel playing field. What do we do about that in state legislatures across this country?
I mean, there's a supermajority in New York, right? How are they using power? That is the question we have to ask ourselves. How is power being used? Is it being used to bludgeon the voice of the minority party? Is it silencing people? Is it expelling members? There is an abuse of power that we are experiencing in the supermajority in Tennessee, and I don't think that is the way that power has to operate. Having a supermajority for good reasons, because you elevate the issues of the poor, because you're expanding the social safety net, because you are valuing the life of individuals and respecting people. That is one thing. But to have a supermajority because you gerrymandered yourself into that possibility, because you stopped black folks from having representation or Latino folks or people of color or poor folks, right? If you're getting a supermajority because you are bending the rules and bending the law to your favor in order that you never have to compromise, you never have to see different perspectives, that is what's harmful and dangerous. And the Republican Party in Tennessee really is a snake eating its own tail, because our democracy is not built that way. And the people, Republican and Democrat, progressives, more conservative people, are rising up in this moment, in this movement.
Is that where your optimism lies then?
Always. I'm eternally optimistic and hopeful that the majority of people, over 70% in our state, want to see sensible gun laws. And that's across race, that's across demographics, because the things that not only unite us, but the things that we want our elected officials to fight for, they are very similar, regardless of where you are in the state of Tennessee. But what we have are people who are not proximate even to the folks they are supposed to serve. And that's why pushing for more democracy to elevate the people in our communities to the polls so that they also are engaged beyond the polls on issues like gun violence, on issues like environmental and climate justice is so important.
So for you as a lawmaker, what do you think you have accomplished over the last several weeks and months?
I don't think about what I have accomplished as an individual or Representative Jones, Representative Johnson. I think about what we as a movement have accomplished. Because you have to remember, right, there's the tens of thousands of people who marched and who protested and who spoke up, even for our own reinstatement, that got us to this point in this place. There are governors passing laws related to gun violence that didn't pass those laws last year or the year before that, that in this moment are passing those laws because the movement of people across the country to do something is what is growing. And it is a voice of younger people. It is a voice that is intergenerational, that is multiracial, that is showing that for us to have the democracy that we want, it is going to require all of us to participate fully and more meaningfully. And so when I look at the landscape of what has happened in recent weeks, despite the tragedy at Nashville Covenant School and the tragedy in my own community with Larry Thorne, my classmate, dying from gun violence, there are people who are choosing to be triumphant. And that is inspiring. And that is motivating me and so many others to do more.
We keep on wondering what it's going to be, what it's going to take to move the needle on this issue. And it wasn't Uvalde, and it wasn't Newtown, and it wasn't Las Vegas, and it wasn't the shooting in Tennessee. It scares me as to what it could be.
The reality is we are in a different moment each time these tragedies happen. The perspective, the amount of people who are engaged, the age of people is different, and the awareness is different every time these mass shootings happen, every time these shootings happen in our community. And so while for me, I thought the threshold in our country, particularly at the federal level, was going to be the Sandy Hook shooting, and that obviously did not become the case. What we are seeing is each year people are becoming more aware. People are growing in their ability to vote and turn 18 and participate in our process, that I am still optimistic that we are in a movement that is continuing to see change happen because more people are being more responsive. Now, have we had the watershed amount of legislation that I think we need, particularly in Republican places, Republican-controlled legislatures? No. And the reality is the litmus test for American democracy, it isn't in our more progressive places in our country. It's actually in the South. It's in the places where you have the most descendant of enslaved people. It's where you have white supremacy and patriarchy at its zenith that we have to say, if it is not happening there, then the country is not where it ought to be.
My final question for you is one of that you, from your experience, perhaps can help with. I'm 55 years old. I am more than a middle-aged white guy. How do we get more people like you running for office in this country?
Yeah, I think more people will run for office as they realize the power that politics has on all of our lives. Even being a state lawmaker, I running for the state legislature, I hadn't realized how much of our democracy and our rights are happening at the state level. And so I think as we have more awareness, as people realize the power of being in a position of power, and what that has, I think that's one thing. As Generation Z grows up, I think that's going to be extremely helpful because the issue of gun violence, the issue of climate change are real and prescient. But I think there has to be an intergenerational push that we need older folks and elders in the movement to encourage young people to provide pathways for them to engage as well.
Is that what happened to you?
Yes. Representative Dr. Barbara Cooper, she was 93 years old when she passed away, and I ran in the special election in her seat. But when I got involved in social justice, it was because she had called a meeting with the pipeline company that we ultimately defeated to Memphis. And I attended that meeting, which helped to launch my participating in environmental justice. And she and I working together over years to advance a lot more legislation, but a lot more community activity on these issues.
But you see people, a lot of young people that are sort of shunning, and they have their lives, you know, and they're trying to figure out what to do just to start a family and live. Right, exactly. And yet you can you you saw it as something that you wanted to do and needed to do.
We can't separate the privilege also of being in public service in the way that I am in Tennessee, which is a part-time legislature. I'm able to do other work, such as consulting on environmental justice issues, whereas other folks really might have a family, might have tons of school debt. I was fortunate not to have school debt. And people have so many other barriers to entry. Running for office costs a lot of money. If you don't have the social network to run for office or raise money, what support do you have? Like, we have to realize that to be in an elected official is not just like an easy path and everyone can do it, even though I think the civic-mindedness of our country is everyone should be able to run. Everyone should do it. The institution has very often been set up so that only wealthy white people and wealthy white men in particular would be able to participate. And in Memphis and in Shelby County and in Tennessee, overwhelmingly, that's who's able to participate, because it's the entrepreneurs who are business owners. It's the people who have generational family wealth. It's the attorneys who can take the time off, in quotes, to be able to serve in the legislature. Not so much the teachers, not the plumber, not the general contractors who are able to do this job. And so we got to think about how we reduce the barriers to entry for people to run for office and serve long-term throughout the year, in addition to engage more people in the political process to hold elected officials accountable.
You're a great inspiration, and I thank you very much for speaking with us.
I am inspired by you and inspired by so many people here in Albany and in New York who are committing themselves to the cause of justice. And we're not in this for a short campaign or a few months. This is a lifetime commitment that we got to renew every day that we get the good fortune from God to wake up in the morning.
Justin Pearson represents House District 86 in Memphis, Tennessee. We spoke with him at the New York State Capitol on Tuesday. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.